The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. It's 4 minutes past nine on this Tuesday, the 30th of June, 2026. Thanks so much for listening. How are you all keeping? I really do hope you're very well indeed. We're in good form here. It's a bit overcast in the northwest, but that's grand. Weather's going to improve towards the weekend. As long as you're healthy, isn't that it? Right, we've an awful lot coming up on the programme. Caroline Orr is back after a short break, so we want to really hassle her with messages and texts and comments just to get the cobwebs cleared. Here's how you get in touch. WhatsApps and texts, 086 6025000, 086 6025000. The phone line there for you, Katie, answering calls with Caroline today, 07491 25000. Or if you want to email, it's comments at highlandradio.com. Watch the programme if you wish. The visual presentation available for you on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, Smart TV, Fire Stick, mobile devices, and we're across Facebook and X as well. So there's no excuse not to get involved. Kathy already on. Good morning to you, Kathy. Thank you so much for watching. Lots of the papers today, different stories, some covered in the news, so we'll dig into them a little bit further. Just to remind you, by the way, coming up after 10 o'clock, we've got Community Garda Information, where we bring you the very latest appeals and information from An Garda Síochána Conaill here. Very interesting, obviously, in that if you can help with investigations, but also, too, you know, it can give you a trend of what's going on. We've got some advice, so if there's a particular illegal activity in certain areas, you can be made aware of that, of course. And also to a lot of scams. Be really careful now over the next couple of days, will you? And I don't want to sound preachy, but there's new rules coming in, and I mentioned them yesterday about a new €3 charge for certain items from outside the EU being imported into this country. So, you know, potentially your Shein, your Temu stuff. Now, some of that's dispatched from European factories, so it won't affect you. But what's going to happen is you will start getting scam text saying, we have your order, but you are due to pay a €3 fee to release it, a customs fee. And you're going to be thinking, all right, well, I heard that on the radio. There is a customs fee and I need this stuff, so I better send it. They will never look for you to click through a link on text. That's the simple thing. So if you get an SMS or an email purporting to be from Revenue or on post, sometimes you will have a fee that has to be paid, but it will never be a click-through. It'll never be a click-through to follow this link and then go on to Revenue or on post website. It's done via the app or directly with them. So never click through. That's the message, really. I think that's the catch-all. Never click through. But you will see these scams coming because there are teams of people that are looking to take our money. And it's not the €3 that you miss out, because if you give them the details to take €3, they can take much more. So, as I say, we're just in a period where scammers will start exploiting a complicated change in imports, and we just need to be extra careful that we don't get caught out. I think one of the biggest scams that goes about is the deals purporting to be from Lidl or Aldi or other discount stores, whereby the address appears to be exactly the same. People are buying stuff from them all of the time. The Irish Independent, almost 1,900 women were turned away from domestic violence refuges in the final 6 months of last year due to a shortage of beds, a new report has revealed. A one-day census of domestic violence services found that 1,872 women fleeing abuse could not be accommodated in the second half of last year because of insufficient refuge capacity, accommodation shortages, staffing challenges, and wider resource limitations. And this is a space where I think we need far more investment. The snapshot survey of 38 domestic and gender-based violence support services on January 28th this year showed that 850 adults and 324 children engaged with services in a single day. Now, if that's not an epidemic, I don't know what is. The report also found there were 29 women engaging with domestic abuse services who were pregnant, and it was compiled by Safe Ireland. It is definitely a space that more needs to be done in. Some good news, and, you know, government gets quite a lot of criticism, and they probably still will in relation to this, but they introduced, obviously, measures to try and reduce the cost of fuel as the war in Iran saw prices go well through €2. Thankfully, they're starting to retreat somewhat now, the prices, but we still have these excise duty cuts. the state has to bring in money, right? So they're going to stay in place effectively until the autumn. Now, people will be critical of it and say that, you know, coming into the winter when people maybe are using home heating oil and cars more, they'll start to see increases. But they have to be, they could have been returned at the end of July, but it's being deferred. I don't know what you think about this. As opposed to look at it objectively, as we should, the government is somewhat damned if they do and damned if they don't in this situation, but it gives people a bit of breathing room maybe to plan. But to read on here, the excise duty cuts to petrol and diesel will be extended until September before they are slowly axed. Government chiefs last night decided to keep the current reductions to help with the cost of fuel in place until later this year. The current cuts were due to expire on July 31st, but coalition leaders have decided to extend the excise reduction on petrol and diesel until September 1st. After this date, the previous rates will be gradually restored over the following 4 months. So there you go. That's what you have to deal with. Obviously, they're down hundreds of millions of euro as a result. But, you know, we are seeing diesel now 164 in places, petrol about 171 in places too. So those prices are coming down, and the raw product, a barrel of oil, still under $80, which is, 25, close on 30% below its peak. We're looking at a major overhaul of one-off house guidelines. It's going to the ministers today. What does this mean? I was speaking to a couple who were trying to get planning permission for ages, and the problem was getting an entrance out onto a road that fed to the N56, and they tried everything over the course of years. Eventually, because they had the means and wanted a roof over the house, they ended up purchasing another site and proceeded to build on that site, and good luck with them with their new house. But if these laws had changed way back when, they probably would not have had to have purchased that additional site. But a major overhaul of one-off housing guidelines will be brought before ministers today. This is in the Irish Daily Mail. New homes are set to be approved through a set of new social and economic criteria and override restrictive planning policies that limit the success of applications. The overhaul will also increase the number of homes that are permitted to be built in one area and ban limits by local councils after years of pressure from rural dwellers over planning refusals. One-off rural homes are houses approved in areas where the land is not previously zoned for residential use, such as on a farm or fields. The issue became a political topic after changes to government policy placed limits on who was eligible to build in certain areas. Minister for Housing James Brown will today bring forward new rules which will override existing local policies and guidelines first introduced over two decades ago. It's likely the guidelines will be approved by ministers this morning as the government has signalled support for changes since the beginning of last year. So we'll have a look at these actual proposals. There's no point over-speculating. There is some details there in relation to building in rural and Gaeltacht areas, but we'll bring you accurate information as to what has changed. I think what we will see, actually, and the planning authorities and the planning authority in Donegal is probably going to see a plethora of resubmissions, so they're going to be overwhelmed, I would imagine. I wouldn't be surprised. Ireland are going to play Israel in Serbia. Many people feel this is unfair on the footballers, forcing them to play a country in a game of football, a country that has been found to be complicit in genocide or responsible for a genocide that has been found to be actively targeting Palestinian children, like literally a policy to kill Palestinian children, and were expecting a team of probably fathers and sons and brothers and uncles to actually go over and play them in a game of football, play against a country that has been found to actively target and kill children. But anyway, the Football Association of Ireland has confirmed Ireland's UEFA Nations League fixture against Israel on October 4th has been moved from Dublin to Bactopola in Serbia. While the FAI initially planned to host Israel in Dublin, they decided to move the game to a neutral venue earlier this month, citing operational challenges in hosting the fixture. Ireland's most recent home game, a friendly against Qatar at the end of May, was interrupted by multiple tennis ball protests from a group calling for the FAI to boycott the Israel fixtures entirely. That game's going to be played behind closed doors, so no one will be travelling to see it anyway. So that takes that dilemma off the table for some. What do you think? Should the game go ahead? or given the findings by independent international arbiters of Israel's actions, should we boycott that? Even if it means we forfeit the points, what difference does it make in the wider context if we miss out on a tournament? At least we can look back in history, can remember that by most people's thoughts that we did the right thing. I don't know, maybe sports should be separate from politics. We'll throw it out there to see what you have to say. We were talking about petrol and diesel, and the government excise breaks came about, many would argue and many would feel, due to fuel protests. Well, the government has set its stall out in the event of any future fuel protests, and they say that the army will support Gardaí if fuel protests cause further blockades, this particularly during Ireland's EU presidency, Defence Minister Helen McEntee has said. Now, I don't see any scenario, thankfully, at the moment, where we would see fuel protests again into the future, but she's been asked the hypothetical question and she's answered. You will know early this year, chaos erupted when some of the country's ports and refineries were blocked as prices skyrocketed due to the US-Iran war. Protesters were further angered when Justice Minister Jim O'Callaghan announced the army was requested to assist as the blockade of critical infrastructure would not be permitted. Talking of critical infrastructure, Ukraine currently is in 40 days of action, where they're conducting what they call long-range sanctions. I don't watch news much. I glance through some news websites and obviously I look at the papers for this item, but I don't see much reports of what they're doing. And every night, pretty much, they're sending 400, 500, 600 drones into Russia, into Crimea, and there is no fuel, literally no fuel, in Moscow, other major cities, and in much of Russia. And the reason I connect it to that last story, we blocked two or three of ours and there were shortages in days. The Ukrainians are blowing up refineries, they're blowing up depots, they're blowing up transit links. And there is absolute chaos in Russia because they don't have fuel. Crimea, which is a Russian holiday hotspot, is pretty much emptied out now because of what Ukraine is doing. They're using rockets, drones, propeller-driven drones, jet-propelled drones. So I'm not sure how much coverage it's getting, but it's really quite remarkable. And I'm not saying good or bad. That's up to you guys. I'm not saying that one either way. But it's remarkable that they have brought Russia and Russian society to its knees in a couple of weeks. It's really quite remarkable. Even Putin admitted in an interview, which ended up being edited, that they are struggling against Ukraine at the moment. And what about this? A lot of people, I think, unfairly are critical of teachers. They work very hard in front of classes of 30 plus, you know, and sometimes by the time they get their holidays, I think they're really well earned. But will there be jobs into the future? Because there is a trial. Now, it's not taking place here, but it's in America. Robot teaching assistants are coming to New York schools as part of a new trial program. The initiative launched by Realbotics Corp is being rolled out at Salamanca City Central School District on the Seneca Nation Reservation in New York. It combines the company's AI-powered educational platform, Optio, with the deployment of a humanoid robot designed to interact with pupils in the classroom. Optio has been developed as an AI teaching assistant and an at-home tutor. The Realbotics M-series humanoid robot is capable of engaging in natural conversation, displaying facial expressions, and responding to pupils in real time. So it's like a physical AI that's there in the school. Is that the future? I don't know. Don't even want to think about it. We're joined by Chrissia Lynch, co-chair of Ames ERA. Good morning to you. It is Chrissia, isn't it? Or is it?
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing good, thank you. Right, now, what was this review all about, gathering data on intervention rates for pregnant women? What is the aim of this study, this research?
Okay, so first of all, I guess this isn't research per se. This is publicly available data. Yeah. And what we would really like to do is ensure that people who are pregnant in Ireland are aware of what's going on in their local hospitals. And the HSE release this data every month for that very purpose, so that people can find out what's happening. And it informs people so that they can ask questions if they feel that they want to have a particular type of birth. So, for example, some people will be looking for induction. They will be looking for interventions. Other people might be looking for a cesarean section, so that they know that these types of things that are available. And on the other hand, some people are not looking for those things. So again, they can be informed that if they want to not have them, they may need to advocate for themselves. So I guess it's really a public awareness exercise.
So when you look through the HSE's maternity patient safety standards for Letterkenny University Hospital, the hospital for the majority of Donegal, what did the data show?
Well, the data showed that it was the fourth highest of all the maternity units for that particular month with respect to first-time mother cesarean section rates. So the rates for Letterkenny were 51% for a first-time mother, so to have a cesarean section. For a second or third or fourth-time mother, the rate was 38.7%. And for mothers being induced, the rate for first-time mothers in Letterkenny was 49%. So those rates are quite high. They are, like I say, they were the fourth highest in the country, but not the highest. There was other hospitals who were in the 60s, but there were also other hospitals who were in the 20s and in the 30s. So when the rates are that high, we have to ask ourselves, I guess, two questions. Why does it matter? That's the first question. Does it matter? And the second question is, you know, why does it happen? So I guess as a patient advocacy organization, we're speaking on behalf of women. And, you know, it does matter for women, because if you're having a cesarean section, it means that you're entering into the postnatal and becoming a mother for the first time, with all the issues that that brings, because it's such an uncertain and vulnerable time for people. And a lot of people aren't supported by, you know, their aunts and their parents in the way that they might have been before in the old days. So it's an uncertain time, and you're approaching it now having had major abdominal surgery. For example, for a rural area like Donegal or other parts of the Northwest, you know, you're usually reliant on your car, so you wouldn't be able to drive for the first 6 weeks. We know that people who have had more difficult and challenging birth experiences are more likely to have postnatal depression, and that has an effect not just on the woman, but on her baby and her whole family.
What does that figure, though, how do we know, or do we know, is that women choosing, saying, I prefer a C-section, or is it clinical advice saying, look, it might be best to get a C-section, or do we have a different approach here in how we would have that conversation or tease out options? Like, I mean, obviously we just have that base figure, but do we know what it means? Can we extrapolate from it?
Well, the HSE knows exactly what different categories there are. There are 10 different categories. We're not going to bore everyone with the 10 different categories, but there are 10 different categories. And those include people who are choosing a cesarean section. Those include people who, for example, are having twins and have issues. That includes people who have absolutely no issues and go into labor on their own. That includes people who have no issues but are induced. So there are all these different categories. And what we do know is that when we have rates increasing like this, because it wasn't 50% about 4 or 5 years ago, Greg, it was a lot less. It was less than 30. So it's been a dramatic increase. So we know that the increase comes in two categories, and they aren't the categories of people choosing it. They are the categories of people who start off labor, whether it be an induced labor or a spontaneous labor, and they are well and their baby is well. But then, due to quite intensive interventions, they end up either they are unwell in their labor or their baby starts to show signs of distress. And then obviously a cesarean section is the best course of action. So that's one of the categories we know that's involved. And the other category that we know is involved is people who have had a cesarean section the first time. Maybe they chose it, maybe they didn't, maybe they had a breech baby, whatever. The second time round, there are very few options for them to attempt a vaginal birth. So we know that in some units, the culture of the unit is such that, yes, okay, you had a difficult experience first time. Yes, okay, you know, your baby went in distress, or you had that weird presentation and we had to do a cesarean. But this time we're going to support you into having a vaginal birth. So we know that when
just
the second time mum rates are high,
so
that's
could
not
we,
happening.
Could we see a situation, hypothetically, wherever it might be, that it could be It could be just a culture. It seems a strong word to say, but a culture of you know, being over cautious, trying to avoid problematic vaginal births. If you get where I'm coming from, and then that data change and rolls over. So people might say, just an abundance of caution. If there's any concern, let's go C-section.
Well, you're absolutely hitting the nail on the head there. There was an interesting piece of research that came out of Trinity College a couple of years ago, and they looked at a whole variety of different reasons that are informing the increase. And one of the things that they focused on heavily was the culture of litigation that we have in Ireland, that, you know, people are practicing defensive medicine, and that's unhelpful. It's unhelpful for women, and it's also unhelpful for people who are practicing, because they don't get to develop their skills in vaginal birth. You know, we've practically lost the skill of breech birth in Ireland, literally lost it, because the first course of action is go to cesarean section, because if I have to stand up in court, I can say I did a cesarean section. And if anything did happen to that baby or that mother, everybody would concur that I followed the best course of action. So yes, that you're absolutely right. There is a culture, but there's also things like not having the time to wait. And a lot of people will end up with a cesarean section because their labor is just simply very slow. They go into a cesarean section, their baby is fine and they're fine, but their labor is slow. So why are we not waiting? We're not waiting because we don't have resources. We don't have enough midwives there. We don't have enough doctors there. Yeah. I mean, both of those categories, midwives and doctors, we're very short on them in Ireland. I mean, people think it's just midwives, but it's doctors as well. Yeah. And we need the resources, and the HSE really need to put the resources into maternity care so that, you know, there's a rewarding experience for those that are working in that area, but also so that mothers and babies are the healthiest that they can be when they come out of the experience.
Yeah, it'd be really interesting to see a correlation between the scrutiny of a hospital's maternity services and the rate of C-sections. I'm speculating here, but it might be interesting. In terms of inducements, inductions, 49% at Letterkenny University Hospital. Again, is there anything in relation to that figure for us locally compared to other hospitals that we can conclude anything from, Chrisa?
Well, it is higher than a lot of other hospitals. But really, one of the things that comes across from women when they speak about their induction experiences. And when we posted this on our social media, funny enough, we posted the rates for a lot of different hospitals. And the one hospital that had the most discourse was actually Letterkenny. Mm. You know, women had the most to say about their experiences. And I do want to say that many women came on and said they had great experiences in Letterkenny. I don't want people thinking that, oh, I'm going into Letterkenny and I might not have a good experience. No, many people do have good experiences. But one of the issues that was spoken about from women was that they said that they felt that they were pressurized into induction. They felt that they didn't really have any choice. And so my advice, if you take something away from this and you're listening and you're pregnant, is that we have a national induction guideline, which was produced in 2023. And in that guideline, it absolutely states that it's up to you whether you're induced or not. And if you decide you don't want to be induced at 39, 40 or 41 weeks, then the hospital are mandated to support you in checking you and checking your baby and having a kind of a partnership of care so that you feel well supported in making your choice. Yeah. And I think that's one area that we really need to work on.
It is kind of interesting though, but I mean, you know, obviously, well, not obviously, but I've been through this myself with partner, but also, you know, other relatives. And you know, you'll be up to high dough with a baby because you know you want to make sure everything's okay. But sometimes I think the way the information is related in terms of size and how the pregnancy is going, I think it can make people feel quite fearful to the point whereby by the time it gets to this point where the baby's on the way, just to have it at home, C-section, induction, whatever you think, go ahead.
Well, I think you're, again, putting the nail on the head. We'll have to have you on the podcast as a partner because, you know, that's really exactly what happens is that, you know, people go to antenatal classes and they're like, okay, I have these options and I know that I can decline this and I know I can accept that and I know this had this benefit and I know that this has this risk. But if somebody mentions words such as, you know, high risk, big baby, and sometimes people even do say, you know, your baby could die if you don't do this. I mean, the first thing people are going to do is just say, well, do whatever you need to do.
And do you know what else happens too? They pick a date They pick a date for when they believe a baby was conceived, and it doesn't shift. So you could be told, you could be told the whole way through that pregnancy, the baby's a bit small, it's a bit small, it's a bit small. And for some reason, they wouldn't, and maybe there is good reason, they won't revise the date. And then that determines whether you're induced or deemed premature or overdue. Is that something that you hear? Because it's another thing that I've engaged with, and it puts the living daylights up people.
Greg, you're doing my job for me. You have to come on as a committee member onto AIMS. This is exactly what happens. It's exactly what happens. So in the them old days, you know, women weren't given a date and it was like a cast date in stone. Here's the news is that only 4% of women will give birth on their quote due date unquote. Most people don't. It's a window, you know, birth, labor, producing a baby, growing a baby. It's still a natural process. And there are still secrets that we haven't uncovered, that science hasn't uncovered to it. We know there's a window. We know the window is from 37 weeks to 42 weeks. Around that time, a baby is cooked. Some women will deliver their babies at 37 weeks and those babies will be fine. Other people will deliver their babies at 41 weeks and 5 days or even at 42. There were people on the on our Facebook page yesterday who were saying they delivered babies at 43, 44 weeks because the date they were given was wrong.
Yeah, and it's probably 7 or 8 pounds.
Exactly, 7.5 pounds. Mm. So the date is there. Why is the date there? The date there is really not to help the woman at all. The date is there to help administration and to help management.
But when you're told you know, then when, your baby's when, big or small and you're up to high dough anyway, like it's, you know, it takes out sort of that human, okay, well, maybe the initial date, I think we'll review that because this baby looks to be at 37, you know, 22 weeks or 33 or whatever it might be. It would be great to see that sort of, that acquired knowledge used to often alleviate unnecessary anxiety.
And you see, that's what happens is people do get anxious. It's a natural state of affairs. You know, when you're coming to the point of bringing a new human being into the world, and even if you're the partner, there is a level of anxiety and there is a level of vulnerability, and nobody can say that there isn't. I defy anyone to say that there isn't, because there is. And unfortunately, sometimes that can be played on to maneuver people into making certain choices. So the answer to that is to ensure that you have access to good support, maybe not from the hospital, maybe have a doula, maybe have, you know, someone who can support you in your pregnancy yoga class, maybe have antenatal classes that are outside the hospital, just to get an alternative perspective. You know yourself that when you're trying to make a decision and you're in with all the other people and the pressure is on, if you just take a walk outside and you realize, oh, hang on, that's all part of what's going on in that room. There are actually other perspectives. And, you know, having that kind of alternative perspective and that alternative approach and being informed, I guess that's a really big thing. We have quite a lot of information on our website, aimsera.ie, about, you know, options, about making a birth preference sheet, about knowing what your rights are, about knowing what you can ask for, what questions you can ask, how to process information. And, you know, unless it's an absolute emergency, and we know that only 6%, if that, of cesarean sections are absolute emergencies. Unless it's an absolute emergency, you can always have an hour, a day, 2 days, you know, half a day. And just because somebody puts your name down for an induction on an induction list, there's no requirement for you to turn up. It's like having your name on a dentist list. You know, if you suddenly decide, no, I just can't face the fact I'm going to have a filling, it's all too much for me, then, you know, you're not going to go. You're going to say, well, I'm not coming for that. It's no different from that. But people are often very frightened about making decisions that might somehow reveal them as being, you know, a bad patient or, you know, put a black mark against them. No, all that you're asking for there is you're asking for more of a partnership and discussing what's going on. And people are asking to be heard. And that is a constant thing that we find in the maternity services, both in this area and many others, is not being listened to.
Yeah. And there's a practical implication, too, for some of the dating that we talked of in that, you know, mums often are sent up and down to Galway for scans. It's just an accident of our geography here. Not an accident, sorry. It's just a reality of it as well. One other thing, maybe this is completely separate, and I don't want to put you on the spot, but there's also, isn't there, when you're induced because the baby's coming out when it was not necessarily expecting to come out, there's a medication given to the mother, is there not, to ensure the baby is, to help the baby's lungs post-birth. Is that correct?
Right. That's usually given to babies who are pre-37 weeks. So what's interesting, I mean, induction itself has different stages and phases. So there's the first part of an induction to just ensure that the cervix is open enough to break the person's waters. And then there's a second part to an induction after that, which involves a chemical cocktail of basically forcing the uterus to contract at a high dough rate. But if a baby needs to be induced, or if somebody goes into labor spontaneously and it's before 37 weeks, then there will be a medication, a steroid actually, given to the mother to help mature the baby's lungs. Yep. Just, and sometimes I think it looks like that baby's going into labor, but maybe it doesn't.
Yeah, I just I think it just the reason I want to throw that out there is because, you know, we talk about self-advocacy in other areas of medicine. And, you know, sometimes maybe that steroid's not given and can cause complications. So it's no harm just for people to know all the options. And they can get all information and links to that podcast that you mentioned, Ames Era, and that's E-I-R-E, of course, Ames Era, more details and supports and all that kind of stuff. Listen, it's been wonderful speaking to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
And you too, Greg. Thanks a million. Take care.
Goodbye. A caller says, Women's Scotland, the Scotland women's team played Israel a month ago. There wasn't a word. If you look at what the USA did to Afghanistan, many people were killed, but nothing was said, and they had not been banned from sports. If we go down a route, I suppose, whereby we sort of say, well, the USA and Afghanistan, and you're quite right. But, there's something very current, and we have a great deal of knowledge and ongoing knowledge of what Israel has done, and the UN independently has found what they have done. We're in this space now. So what do we do now? You know, because the US, I mean, are we really looking to the USA for sort of advice in this area, you know, or is there a moral stand you can take? I don't know. What do you think? Morning, Greg. Maybe Israel shouldn't be allowed to qualify for European competitions. Well, that's not going to happen because Israel is incredibly powerful and wields great influence. That's the reality, even over Ireland. So that's why they're not banned from something as silly as the Eurovision. That's why they're not banned from sports, because the United States would kick up an absolute stink if they were to. But I'll read on the comment here. Morning, Greg. Maybe Israel should be allowed to qualify for European competition. It's hardly our fault that they don't get on with their geographical neighbours. How are they allowed to use Europe for tournament qualification? And how come their club teams are in the European Champions League? They aren't European. FIFA has made a rod for its own back. On the issue of school transport and tied into changes to fuel breaks that we've received. A caller says that suits the government because look at the many school buses that will be back on the road in September and cars doing the daily school run. Yes, that's quite interesting. But there's a lot of traffic during the summer as well. But no, I take your point. Right, the government is being urged to invest €8.23 million in community dementia supports. This amid a rising demand. Carol Malloy is Alzheimer's Society of Ireland Operations Manager for the Northwest. And we're at that time, Carol, aren't we, whereby, you know, the budget is just around the corner and now's the time to be pitching this. I know it's not a brand new conversation, but, you know, you want it really to get to the ears of those that make the calls, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. Like, the demand for dementia services is just growing rapidly, Greg, you know, and the services are under pressure. So this is the right time now for investment, you know, from the government, just to provide, you know, the access to supports at the right time for people living in the community, you know. Like, we're just all about helping people live well with dementia and stay at home longer. So definitely this is the right time to call for the investment from the government.
Listen, thankfully people are living longer and will continue to do so. But it's about the quality of life, I suppose, as well. We know, don't we, and you'll go through the figures for us, we know where this is going in terms of the percentage of the population or the number of the population with dementia now and where we might be in 20-odd years. We don't want to be chasing this every budget, do we? This is the type of issue where the figures are there and the government need to get out in front of it from your perspective, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Like, it's estimated at the moment there's 64,000 people living with dementia in Ireland. But, you know, the figures are showing now that by 2045, that figure could have risen to anything around 150,000. There's around 11,000 new cases every year. You know, and 63% of those people are living at home, and they're relying really heavily on the community supports. You know, so it's just vital. Like, we have a lot of support at the moment in Donegal, but it's not enough. You know, we have six dementia day centres at the moment. In Glenties, Gwydor, Clohan, Buncrana, Newtown, Cunningham and Clonmany. But we need more. You know, if you look at the logistics of County Donegal, you know, that's not enough for everybody to have access to a day centre. It's the same with the home care, and we have a daycare at home service. Like, we have quite a lot of hours, but it's still not enough. You know, we have people waiting on service. We have people in rural areas that we need to get to, that we need to be able to provide service to. So it's so important now that the government just look to the future, you know, to make sure that there's enough care in place for everybody. Mm. You know, and behind every person living with dementia, that there's a family there as well. You know, it's not just the person living with dementia. It's affecting so many other people. And they're doing their best to cope, but often they have quite limited support.
Yeah, and of course, they're caring for their loved ones. Yeah, they're caring for their loved ones, Carol. But of course, too, they are potentially doing the role of the state. You know, the caring has been thrust upon them, such as the nature of this disease. You know, and that means supporting them, understanding how much their lives has changed, and ensuring that they maybe get some time to themselves to help them better with their own health, mental and physical, in the role of a carer as someone with dementia. And I'm talking obviously there about respite. So that feeds into the benefit for families and carers, if they're related or not.
Yeah, I mean, the benefits are there for the person living with dementia when they attend a service or they have a service coming into their own home. But it also provides that much-needed rest break for the person that's caring for them. You know, it's a hard job. It can be 24/7, and to have that little piece of their own time every week is so vital. It's so important to people. It just makes that role of caring that little bit easier to know that every week, you know, they're going to have that break for themselves, just for some headspace and time to do the things that they need to do. Like, we do provide a lot of supports as well for the family. You know, we have our dementia advisor service, and it's available throughout County Donegal. So people can tap into that service, and that offers support and guidance, you know, for the person living with dementia and the family. And we also offer family carer training, which is really good. It's a 7-week course that people can apply for. It's free. And it just, I suppose, it just goes from through all the different stages of caring for somebody. And it provides a support network as well. So they meet other people in a similar situation, so they don't feel so isolated. And it just becomes like a kind of network for people, because it can be quite a lonely time for people when they're caring for someone. You know, they can become quite isolated from their communities. So it's just good to get to meet people that are in a very similar situation. But like, if people are looking for information on our services, they can contact. We have a helpline. It's 1-800-341-341. Or they can go onto our website, alzheimer.ie, and all of the information about all the services in Donegal, and also the family carer training, how to access your local dementia advisor. Everything is on the website. So if anybody's out there now looking for some help, please reach out to us, you know.
So important.
We can help. Yeah,
because there's great stuff there already. A lot of people associate dementia with older people, maybe those over 65. And I suppose, understandably, because that perhaps is the majority of cases. But we do see younger onset dementia. And I presume the service or the support might be somewhat different, is it? And does this call for additional funding, look to target that particular space as well, to make more targeted services for younger onset dementia?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, people can be affected with dementia in their 30s, 40s, 50s. It's not something that is specifically to people who are over 65. But as you say, Greg, probably the majority of people with dementia are over 65. But we also need to cater for service for those under 65. And in recent years, the Alzheimer's Society have started off with activity clubs, cognitive stimulation therapy, maintenance cognitive stimulation therapy, which is more sort of suitable, I suppose, for somebody under 65. And again, there's a call to the government this year to invest more into those services so that we can offer them, I suppose, nationally and try and make them accessible for everybody.
Yeah. And for what the Alzheimer's Society of Ireland do, and for the money they save the state for various reasons, which money that isn't spent is hard to track, but I hope our government do see the benefits of this. The 8.23 million additional funding request in the scale of the health budget is minuscule. I hope it's not so little that it's overlooked. My point being that, you know, obviously you're delivering good value for money. So hopefully this demand will be met.
Yeah, hopefully this year, hopefully the government will invest this year, you know, to keep people at home and you know, not looking into a long-term care option for, you know, is definitely saving money. So the more the government can invest, as you say, it's a small amount in relation to the overall health budget. To invest that small amount will keep so many more people living well at home and provide the supports that the carers need and the person living with dementia will need to help them stay at home for as long as possible.
All right, listen, thank you so much, Carol. As I say, you know, and that's the great thing, hopefully, about democracy, because we've got 38-odd councillors locally that can go, right, I think I'll back this and try and progress it at a local level. And we've got five TDs who could have influence either as part of government, as opposition. It's lovely if we see democracy from the ground up working like that and supporting great organisations like yours. Thanks, Carol.
Thanks so much, Greg.
Salaam. We're joined on the programme by Frank Dorian, solicitor. Good morning, Frank. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, Greg. Thank you.
Just to catch us all up, if you could talk to us briefly about the freezing or cutting of fees for solicitors and the campaign to have them restored or to track inflation. And I suppose then that will lead us on to the sort of actions of the Justice Minister or his proposals right now, because there's been a long campaign for a restoration. And instead of that, we're entering into a new flat free rate for each case. So just catch the listener up to date, Frank, if you don't mind.
Okay, well, the history of this is that in 2008, legal aid and criminal legal aid payments to solicitors were cut as a result of the recession at the time. And that position endured for 16 years, 18 years, actually. And last year, the system was restored to the pre-2008 level. And that probably gave rise to some kind of a spike in the payments to the government. In that 18-year period, things had moved on. The manner in which cases were dealt with, the care and consideration given to them on both sides had increased. And consequently, the reaction of the Minister for Justice was to try to impose a flat rate for each case, regardless of the complexity or the duration of that case. And that essentially means a sort of a bargain basement legal aid scheme being imposed on the legal profession without any consultation or with any proper dialogue, without any proper dialogue.
Yeah, it's an interesting tactic, isn't it? Because you sort of counter one campaign or movement with a more controversial one.
Yeah, well, the position we find ourselves in is that this thing has been delivered to us as a fait accompli, and the only response that we can make in any meaningful way is to withdraw our services. Now, my profession takes what they do very seriously, and in my experience, they do it very well. And to withdraw our services does slow down the system. It creates a logjam, which will have to be dealt with by us in the future. And it causes inconvenience, but unfortunately, we have no option. We have no other means of addressing this problem.
Now, obviously, in some cases, this might actually benefit solicitors, but I am imagining more complex cases, maybe those involving, you know, people with an addiction or a mental illness, or where children might be involved, where, you know, there could be, for the benefit of the client, there could be, you know, multiple deferrals or adjournments, sorry, you know, with a view to getting the best outcome for the person. And their future, in fact. And it's those cases, I think, and you could argue those could be the most vulnerable people, or those with most of their life ahead of them if they plan to travel abroad or what have you, that could be impacted by this type of flat fee measure.
Yes, well, doesn't that actually make the case for dealing with the cases on a case-by-case basis in a much more careful manner?
But do you accept how I framed it? Is that some of your key concerns?
Well, It's easy to say that it's based on the idea that we're representing vulnerable people all the time. The point is that we're providing professional service to people in need. We're providing a voice to people who are not capable of dealing with the matter themselves in that environment. And consequently, we should be paid having regard to the complexity and duration of the case. It should be noted, however, that if the case came before the court at the moment and it was dealt with on the first day, we receive a much lesser fee than that which is now being offered.
Is it how the payments are structured, i.e. is there a flat rate that the Justice Minister could concede that could avert this, or is it that flat rate system that's the problem?
It's the flat rate system itself that's the problem. For example, a colleague of ours was in court yesterday. There was a client in custody. This was the sixth adjournment. The minister's flat rate is modelled on a maximum of 5 adjournments. Every single one of those adjournments yesterday was at the behest of the state. Not one by the accused, not one by the solicitor, yet he has appeared 6 times.
What do you think the implications could be for the legal system here and how it might affect people accused of crimes?
I'm not so sure how enduring an effect it'll have, because they are, at the end of the day, cases being dealt with in a court of summary jurisdiction. But what it will give rise to is a backlog and a logjam, which is going to be very difficult to clear.
Yeah, okay. And what are we likely to see now in terms of action in this dispute to try and press the case with the minister?
Well, firstly, you know, these decisions aren't made lightly by members of the legal profession. We are, at the end of the day, professional lawyers who recognise our obligation to our clients. We may well arrive at an impasse, a logjam, but what is being sought by the Law Society, our representative body, is dialogue with the minister. Now, the Law Society has been writing and trying to engage with the Department of Justice for months on this matter, and were greeted with silence. And last night, at about 5 minutes to 6, a message came through from the department that the minister is proceeding anyway. So confronted with that level of intransigence and that refusal to engage with us, we have no option other than to withdraw our services.
And what does that mean, just for me and listeners, what does that mean in terms of the courts in Donegal here?
It means widespread adjournment of cases, business not being dealt with. It also means solicitors not being paid on an ongoing basis.
Okay, right.
Well, that has a knock-on effect. We are, at the end of the day, running a business. But to simply surrender to this at this point in time would be have a devastating effect on many, many practices across the country. This pattern has been well established, and we acquiesced in the reduction of fees over an 18-year period. We're now being criticised for trying to maintain what was a very reasonable position. It should also be pointed out that the solicitors' profession have not sought an increase in fees from the Department of Justice. This is not a price war with the department. They came up with this. They delivered it to us and said, take it or leave it. And the answer is that we can't take it because it's unmanageable and it's unfair.
And as you say, you know, 16 years.
18 years,
I beg your pardon. And of course, now we're seeing a peak with some restoration there. OK, listen, thanks very much, Frank, for your time. That's Frank Dorian, solicitor there. 086 60 25,000, if you have a view in relation to that. I don't think the players should play the game against Israel at all, especially for the players from Donegal that live so close to Northern Ireland and the history. I think they should just say no in and of itself. I think it's unfair that the players might have to do that. But anyway, we shall see.
The Talk of the Northwest, the Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
In relation to the courts, a caller says, this is shocking. My son has a case pending and for 6 years it's been postponed. And in the meantime, he's grown up and wants to get on with his life, but can't. A difficult situation. And it'd be very interesting to see how the new payment system might have impacted his case. I had my baby 18 days over. I asked, was he overdue? She said he was that overdue. You could peel him like an orange. They changed my dates with him so many times. The ones doing the scans were telling me I wasn't pregnant when I found out I was pregnant. Yeah. When was that, if you don't mind? It'd be just kind of interesting to get a timeline. Like, was that last year or, you know, a number of years ago, just to get a sense of to get a sense of if things have changed. The seven-week course on Alzheimer's was so helpful. The amount of training given to provide knowledge and understanding of the disease was excellent. The phone line support is amazing. When I, as a carer, get overwhelmed, please pass on my thanks to the Alzheimer's Society of Ireland staff. Well, no problem whatsoever. And thanks. It's sometimes easier to pick up the phone and make a complaint. Not you, but us. And it's lovely to get in messages like that as well. There's no way that Ireland should have to play Israel, believes the listener. Why are Israel allowed to take part if Russia are not? Most of the Israeli team have been in the IDF, as it's compulsory to join the army there. And although the GEA are not much better than the soccer boys, birds of a feather flock together, shame on them. I think the GEA is taking quite a bit of a stance. Oh, I suppose, too, their principal sponsor has Israeli connections, so maybe I was just about to talk a lot of nonsense. On the issue of shopping tax, regarding costs on imported items, is this not just tariffs? Yes, of course it's tariffs. The caller says the whole of Europe complained that these tariffs were not right, and now I'll pay €3 on small items, many of them, that cost very little, leaving the item with tariffs of 50%, even 75%. How come it's okay now for us to pay way more than the much complained about 15% the USA put on Irish European products? There's a couple of things, actually, and it actually gets worse. Well, it could get worse, it could get better. Some of your items that you're filling your shopping basket with might be shipped from Europe, which means you wouldn't face the tariffs. So it depends on where the factory is based. So some of it's in Europe, some of it might be in China. Secondly, right, so say you buy, I'll just use a woman for an example, say you buy three outfits or four outfits or five outfits and they're delivered from outside the EU. This often happens, right? You get a delivery, you try them all on. Some of the sizes don't match or what have you. Each one of those items would have €3 on them. But here's the catch. You might be in the habit of returning the items or exchanging the items that don't fit or you don't like. And it's kind of, you know, almost like an in-house fitting room. You don't get the €3 refunded. There you go. So, and they've purposely done that, they say. Revenue say they've purposely done that with a view to circular economy and all that jazz. What do you think about that? Right, now, Councillor Paul Canning, just a councillor now. You've been downgraded. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning to you and good morning to your listeners.
Okay, we talked to you just before you handed over the chain, and now you hopefully have a bit more time. But also you're an architect, and that's the hat we're putting on you, because we're being told that building a home in rural Ireland could be easier. These plans are going before Cabinet. By the time they get to this stage, you know, they're not going to be contested there. So what do we know, and what might get easier for us here in Donegal in terms of building?
In relation to Donegal, Greg, I don't think it will get any easier in Donegal, because in fairness to Donegal, all of the councillors have put on a big shift in relation to the development plan. So they're nearly, looking at it or hearing about it, they're nearly using the template that we use here for rural Ireland in relation to allowing people build within their family land, etc. The big issue we have is the N56, and we have put in strong representation in that. Now, I don't know any detail as of yet, but as you always know, the devil is in the detail in relation to these. And a lot of the time, it's the planners have different interpretation of what comes out. And it's getting all that narrowed down and getting it right. So it'll be interesting to see. But we do have a lot of our planning policies in relation to rural Ireland is not a bad policy at the minute.
If they were to relax building on the N56... would that have an instant impact, or would we have to refine the local development plan to accommodate that? Because, as you say, that's the big bugbear out there for a lot of people.
It would be a one-liner, and it would be what we tried previous to this. We tried to get it that if there's an existing entrance onto a national primary, the intensification of that entrance, if we were improving the entrance itself and making the visibility easier for people to get in and out, that we tried to get that over the line in areas that you had a road going out to the straight of the road, and we thought that would have carried, but obviously it didn't carry. But again, it's the interpretation of what is an intensification. If a son or a daughter that is living in a house already using that road, and then they decide to build their own house because they're bringing another person to the area, are they classing that as an intensification, even though that person could actually live in the house with the in-laws. So it's all of that has to be put to bed, and I think we have an opportunity now. We didn't have a document, but this document will come out. And as you say, it's a draft document, but it could be what I have written. I have written idea, but we will still be asking questions at a national level. There was, up until that, there was, within our group, there was a team that were putting into this nationally that Eamon O'Keefe had led up. We will still, and Niall Blaney was part of that team, we will still be putting in our submissions and questions asked, and maybe getting a caveat in relation to the draft plan again.
So yeah, but in terms of local need, there were situations in the past, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is how it was paraphrased to me, that, you know, you would be refused permission to build on, say, family land, for an example, if you had just moved back, or there were other houses in the area that might have been available for sale, or you hadn't been able to prove you were a local. All these types of barriers, there is some suggestion that if they were there in Donegal, and you can correct me if they're not, that they would be relaxed to allow better use of land and different types of land.
Now, just to clarify, if you are returning to, we'll say you're returning to the Newton-Cunningham area, and you lived in the Newton-Cunningham area for a 7-year period when you were born, from 1 to 7, you lived there, and you came back to Newton-Cunningham, and you had a connection to the land, or to Newton-Cunningham, and you had a housing need. It's a need. If you have already got a house, then the questions are asked, what's the second house for? So you have to have a need for the house. But the other barrier then you have is the road safety aspect of it, and also the treatment of effluent, and if you're in a especially high scenic community
in that scenario you gave, say there was a job I wanted in Newtown Cunningham, I've never lived there. Is the criteria, well, we have to see the detail. My understanding is the criteria is being widened where I could, that would be a sufficient need I could get a favourable planning decision. You know what I mean? I've no connection there, but my job is there, so I could demonstrate. I could demonstrate, you know, a financial interest. I don't know if that's the way of phrasing it, but you know what I mean. That it would be a benefit for my work, for an example. That would be considered now where it might not have been previously.
Yeah, it depends on the work as well, what type of work it is, and it also, you will have the option then, well, did you live in Newton Cunningham as a village before you go into the rural no. setting?
So,
because
yeah.
it's the rural setting is still going to be for the local person from the area.
Mm. Do you know what this is, conversation has proven to me, and it's neither your fault or mine? The planning system is incredibly complex, and this is not going to make it incredibly simple by any stretch of the imagination, because there are so many different avenues currently there. We're just going to really have to wait and see the final document and review if
we're
it gonna, does
yeah, we're
materially
gonna have to wait
impact
and see.
Things.
We're going to have to see, yeah, and we're going to have to go through, as I say, the interpretation is all important. But I would, you know, we, and a lot of the time, you know, we've in the county, we are getting our planning right. In my opinion, you know, there is areas that is overdeveloped, and there is, as I say, urban sprawl, and there is areas where unfilled sites are being used and the work. So we're not, you know, we're not 100 miles away. If we could get the N56 sorted, I would be happy enough with the development plan. But again, it depends on what comes down the tracks from these planning guidelines. But they are speaking, they're using language that if you're within 10 kilometres of where you were born or reared, or where your grandparents or your parents were born or reared, that you will be able to build in that area. Now, we always used a rule of thumb.
And they're relaxing it even more, actually, in the Gaeltacht. Sorry, Paul, just to add to that, and you can include that.
Yes.
They're relaxing that even more so in the Gaeltacht area in terms of time. as well, which would affect, you know, Chrysler as much as Downing's, as much as Gweedore.
Aye, you know, and that, all of that. But again, you know, we can have the conversation at the end of the week when we go through the details.
Yeah, for sure.
As to what could happen and what may happen, you know. But I would be of the opinion, you know, what is written is written, because of all of the assessments and the environmental protection have already been covered. So I don't see them changing a lot from this draft. There might be a caveat put on answering questions and interpretation, but I don't see them changing any of the policies that will be put in front of the Iraqis today.
All right, well, watch on with interest. Thank you very much indeed. That's Councillor Paul Canning, who's also, of course, an architect. A quick message before the break, sorry. I like to listen to your show daily via the internet. Lovely to hear. I was recently in Bundoran on holiday. Could you play a request for me? It's a song called Beautiful Bundoran. We can't do that because I don't play music because I don't have time, but someone else will later. But I just want to say hello to you, Francis Heron in Ochterard in County Galway. It's good to have you on board. We'll not let on to Fionnuala down there. Our former CEO, who's now the CEO of Galway, that we've got one of his. But good to have you on board. Right.
The Community Garda information slot is brought to you by Sheridan Security Systems, monitoring homes and businesses in the Northwest for intruder, fire, panic and medical signals. Call Sheridan Security on 91-26025.
Tuesday, the 30th of June, 26. It's 22 minutes past 10. It's time for this week's edition of Community Garda information. And our guest is Garda Grainne Doherty. Grainne, thanks so much for calling up.
Thanks for having me, Greg. Great. Good morning.
Great to have you with us. Right, a lot to get through today, a lot of appeals out there as well. And we'll start with investigations into an alleged assault in Killigordon.
Yes, Garda, you're investigating an incident that occurred on Saturday, the 27th of June, at the grounds where the Finn Valley show was taking place in the Killigordon area. So around 3 p.m. on that date, a male teenager sustained an injury, dental damage, after he's believed to have been struck by a pellet or something similar from a toy gun. We appeal to anybody who might have witnessed this incident who was present at the Finn Valley show and seen what occurred to get in touch with Gardaí in Ballyshannon on 071-985-8530. And we're just asking, maybe in particular, parents of youths who attended the show, just to have a chat to them in relation to this incident and just to notify us if they have any relevant information, if they witnessed what happened. Anybody with any mobile phone footage from around the grounds of the show around that time is also asked to make it available to us, please.
Yeah, thankfully a rare one. And I'm not saying the injuries aren't significant, but that could have been a real nasty one. Okay. Yeah. An assault on Main Street in Buncrana being investigated.
Yeah, Garda, you're investigating an alleged assault. This occurred at Main Street, Buncrana, in the early hours of Sunday, the 28th of June, so in around 3:30 a.m. A man is reported to have been assaulted by another man at that location. He attended Letterkenny University Hospital following the incident to receive treatment for serious but non-life-threatening injuries. So we're appealing to anybody who might have been in that area with a dash cam, maybe taxi drivers particularly, who may have been round the Main Street area at that time of the morning, to make the footage available to us. If anybody witnessed this incident, we're asking them to please contact Gardaí in Buncrana on 932-0540.
Right. Now, unfortunately, our next appeal, we're going to Leck Graveyard.
Yes, so we're appealing for information in relation to an incident of criminal damage. This occurred in Leck Graveyard in Letterkenny between Monday the 15th of June and Tuesday the 23rd of June. So a grave within the graveyard was damaged at some stage between those dates. So the headstone appears to have been struck by a vehicle or perhaps a trailer. It was dislodged from its position just at the top of the grave and moved. Damage was also caused to the curbing surrounding the grave. So we're appealing to anybody who might have any relevant information in relation to this incident to contact Gardaí in Letterkenny on 074-9167-100. And maybe it's possible, look, maybe it was somebody that was in the graveyard turning and had a trailer or, you know,
misjudged the swing, yeah.
And may just not even really, you know, be aware that this damage was caused. If they were in between those dates, maybe just get in contact with us also.
And I don't know the ins and outs of it, but I would say if there are people affected by this, they might be pleased to hear that it may have been an accident and to be able to move forward in that regard. Okay. Now, we're going to criminal damage in Kilmacrenan this time at the weekend.
Yes, so we're appealing for the assistance of the public in connection with an incident of criminal damage. This occurred in the area of Ard na Glasha, Kilmacrenan. This happened in the early hours of Saturday the 27th of June between approximately 4:50am and 5:05am, so a very short time period there. Two Hitachi diggers were parked up at the back of the estate on a building site and the glass was smashed on the diggers. We're appealing to anybody who might have travelled in that area or within the surrounding area between 4:30am and 5:30am with a dash cam to make that footage available to us. And again, if anybody observed any suspicious activity, people or vehicles in that area between those times, we're asking them to please contact Milford Gardaí on 91 53060 or the Garda Confidential line on 1800 666 111.
As is the case, it seems, every year as we head into and are in the midst of summer, we seem to see an increase in thefts from vehicles. And we have a couple of appeals in that regard. We'll start, will we, at Lisfannan Beach?
Yes, so this theft incident occurred at the car park there at Lisfannan Beach in Buncrana on Wednesday the 24th of June between approximately 6:30pm and 7:15pm. So the driver and their passenger went for a walk. They returned to find that their vehicle had been entered and a black Google Pixel 8a mobile phone was stolen from within their car. No damage was caused to the car. We're appealing to anybody who might have travelled in that area with a dash cam between those times to make the footage available to us, and also anybody that might have observed any type of suspicious activity in that area and around the car park at Lisfannan Beach that evening to contact Gardaí in Buncrana on 9320540. And we do always appeal to the public. You know, if you ever see anybody checking out cars, snooping around cars, checking, looking in windows, trying car doors, please do alert Gardaí immediately.
Yeah, if it looks in any way suspicious at all. And another vehicle targeted, this time Letterkenny.
Yeah, so this incident of theft happened at Upper Main Street, Letterkenny, on Thursday the 25th of June between approximately 5:55am and 6:15am. So a van was parked at that location and it was entered, and a black Samsung mobile phone was stolen from the glove box and no damage was caused. We're appealing to anybody again who might have travelled along Main Street, Letterkenny, between 5:30am and 6:30am on that date with a dash cam to make that footage available to us. And any relevant information should be passed to Letterkenny on 9167 100.
And I suppose it is an opportune time to remind people of how to keep their stuff as secure as possible.
Yeah, and look, we're blue in the face advising people about locking their cars, and we do advise them. And I would just like to say we're not proportioning any blame in relation to these incidents.
People are trusting, and people think I'll be back in 2 minutes, and people are all full of the joys of spring, maybe heading into a field, up a mountain, onto a beach. It's human nature, and we don't want to constantly fear that maybe our car might be targeted, but we can't ignore instances like this, and we have to be more cautious. So what should we be doing?
Yeah, well, to be realistic, you're always going to have opportunistic thieves. They're going to be out and about.
Well, if you're targeting cars, where do you go? You go to a car park.
Exactly.
You go to a car park where people, generally speaking, are away from their car for at least half an hour.
Yeah.
You don't go to a beach and you're in and out of the car park in a couple of minutes. So if you're in the business of stealing other people's stuff, you go to the car. If there's 10 cars in a line, you know two of us are not closing the car. Because
even if a window's left down the car, you know, enough that a person can reach in into a glove compartment in the car. Yeah. So just, we're advising all car, van, any type of vehicle owners, always ensure that your vehicle is secure and locked when left unattended, regardless of whether you're leaving it for 5 hours or 5 minutes. Lock it up. Don't leave valuables such as electronics, jewellery or cash in your vehicle. And as we said already, don't make life easy for these people. They are out there. They're out there on the prowl, and they're going to, as you say, if they check 10 cars and they strike luck and one car is open and they get cash out of it, then that's their day's work done. You're making life easy for them. Don't do that. Make sure your car is always locked up. And just in relation, actually, it's both mobile phones were stolen in these incidents. So just we're advising everybody, please take note of your phone's IMEI number. I know it's on your mobile phone box when you get your phone, but the vast majority of people ditch the box.
The
they throw it in the bin when they get their phone. So if you press *#06# on your phone, the IMEI number will appear on your screen. Just, take note of that number. Just in case you ever lose your phone, if your phone's stolen, if this phone's ever recovered or found, then it helps us return it
to
you in a more
timely.
But I think
also it can be used to deactivate the phone to make it useless to the person stealing it as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I'd get great pleasure from if it were me. And people, unfortunately, don't back up their photos on their phone. You know, they change the phone, and there's always enough free upload cloud storage with Google or wherever it might be to back up your stuff. It's really important you back things up. But anyway, get the EMEI *#06#. Keep a note of that.
Yeah,
in the unlikely event that your phone's stolen. The Gardaí have that information. Right, we have an appeal too in relation to an Inishowen road traffic collision. In fact, there's a couple. We'll start in Buncrana.
Yeah, so this road traffic collision occurred at Main Street, Buncrana. Now, this is a few weeks ago at Main Street, Buncrana on Tuesday, the 2nd of June, between 11 a.m. and 12 p.m. So this investigation is ongoing and efforts are being made. You know, CCTV is being checked. A car that was parked at that location at Main Street, Buncrana, was parked across the road from Ferris Lane in a disabled bay. So it's believed to have been struck by a passing van and trailer. Damage was caused to the passenger side of the car and to the wing mirror also. So we're just asking anybody who may have travelled in that area between those times with a dash cam to make that footage available to us. If a van driver believes that they may have been in that area that day with a trailer, and yet again, it's also highly possible that they don't even realise that damage was caused. So we're asking anybody with relevant information to contact Buncrana Gardaí on 932-0540.
Okay, that was late morning on Tuesday the 2nd of June, but that investigation, of course, is ongoing. Quigley's Point next.
Yes, another road traffic collision. This occurred in the R238 at Three Trees, Quigley's Point, on Wednesday the 24th of June, so shortly after 1 p.m. This collision occurred between a car and a motorcycle. The driver of the car was not injured. The motorcyclist was taken to hospital to receive medical treatment for non-life-threatening injuries. We're appealing to anybody who may have travelled along that route, so the road between Muff and Quigley's Point, and at 1 p.m. that road would have been extremely busy, you'd imagine. If anybody had a dash cam and made that journey along that route, we're asking them to please make that footage available to us. And if anybody witnessed this collision who Gardaí have not yet spoken to, we're also asking them to contact Buncrana Gardaí on 932-0540.
Now, the Donegal Youth Awards, it's open right now for nominations, but not for long, unbelievably.
No, I know.
Tomorrow's July.
Yeah, so the closing date is looming. So just a final reminder today, really, a final push. So nominations for the Donegal Gardaí Youth Awards have to be received by midday on Tuesday, July 7th. So the Gardaí Youth Awards are being held in conjunction with Supermax and the Abbey Hotel in Donegal Town. So they're between people for young people between the ages of 13 and 21. So we're just asking people, just a final push now, get your thinking cap on. You know, if there's a young person or a group of young people that you know who deserve recognition for good work that they have done or are doing, please get your form into us.
So some examples, like last year, a young guy who was involved in the rescue of a person who'd gotten to difficulty. There was another group of young people who were going into residential care settings and engaging there. There was lots of different stuff. Young people advocating for you know, neurodivergence. It is in itself a broad spectrum. So it's anyone in your life, a young person who would get a boost for as part of. So nominating them, by the way, is actually the recognition. So they will be recognised and invited to this event that Garda Grainne is going to tell us about. So the nomination of them is recognising them for what they're doing. Maybe they've become, you know, the go-to carer for an older person in the family, or, you know, there is, maybe they did a bake sale. We had a young person too who was raising money through baking last year. Or
there's
the
such
year
a
before.
Variety of reasons
so literally
why you can nominate.
Could be anything, and as I said before, A, gives them a boost, and B, it's a great night out, and C, also too. I've said this before. It's a lovely thing to have on your CV as well, that you were recognised by An Garda Síochána for your efforts in your community. So, 13 to 21. You know these young people. Listen to Grainne now and make sure that they get the credit that they deserve. So, nomination forms.
Yeah, the nomination forms can be downloaded from the Garda website at www.garda.ie. Call to any Garda station. They have a supply of them at the stations. If anybody wants to contact me, Garda Grainne Doherty at Letterkenny Station. And, you know, if some people maybe aren't au fait with using, you know, websites and online
words.
So they can give me a ring. I can print one out and send it to them by post, whatever suits. The important thing is, do it, fill it in. If you have someone in mind, you can send your completed forms by email to dg.gardayouthawards@garda.ie, by post to me at Letterkenny Garda Station, or drop it into your local station even and they'll get it to me. Whatever way suits you best.
Yeah, okay. Now, with these, the events then take place later in the year in Donegal Town.
Yeah, possibly September. Yeah, we're going to have
Supermax staying on board. The Abbey Hotel, the food is absolutely delicious. Yeah. They're lovely down there.
Yeah, and it's a fantastic night out, as you've already said. And it's important too to mention that everybody that gets nominated will be invited to this
work,
night.
Though? Because it's growing in popularity every year.
It is, and we have quite a few nominations in this year already now, I must say.
You might have to knock a wall through down there. Actually, they have a partition, it'll be grand. Now, one other thing, you don't have any scams on this week, but that doesn't mean they're not there. I was saying to the listeners a little earlier on, we're seeing these €3 tariffs coming in.
Yeah.
You know, the same people that are doing these scams we talk of previously are going to repurpose it. Just never click through a link to pay, because people are going to be saying, you know, we've got your goods, you need to pay your €3, click through this link. You know, Revenue never ask for money directly like that. And on post, they certainly don't send you a link to click through to pay. So just to be extra careful. We will end up talking about it, I'm sure, Grainne.
Yeah.
But we hope not.
I know I did get an email back a number of months ago from AnPost, and it was in the AnPost thread of genuine messages. You know, the
Into
usual,
the text,
within
yep,
the genuine
the clever,
thread
yep.
of messages. And I had gone back, I got a message to say that there was a revenue charge to try and flat out ordering online. So I believed it, but I'm always ordering online. But I looked at the message. There was no link within the message. It just said that a revenue charge was applicable on my most recent order.
Yeah.
So it said go to the AnPost website. And then I scrolled back a bit and there had been a few scam messages within the same thread to say that a revenue charge, but they contained a link.
Yes, exactly.
So what I did was I just went to the AnPost website. I put in my order number and there was actually a revenue charge.
Of
but
course,
there was no link in the message.
Well, that's why you don't click through the link, because revenue or AnPost do not send a click-through link.
No.
That's the one critical thing you can do to avoid it. Don't click a link to link to payment, because it's not €3 they're taking off you. Have you got post due now? Yeah, are you waiting?
I
on
always
anything?
Have post due.
Yeah,
yeah. I owe the delivery vans of a path warned me.
I'm embarrassed now. I've something landed in a couple of hours. Another blooming robot thing. But anyway, listen, that's my problem. Thanks, Brian. No,
thank you very much.
And come here. The debutantes have done very well over the last couple of weeks.
They have.
They've
done brilliantly.
They've stepped up, and
that's great. And it's not an easy task, either. No. It's not easy. I know my first day up here, I was extremely nervous. But you get okay.
Good stuff.
I
mentioned it to them, but pass it on to them.
They did very well now.
So much. Okay, that was Community Garda information for this Tuesday, the 30th of June, 2026. Now, don't forget, it's back live with you after the 10 o'clock news next Tuesday here in Highland Radio. If you missed any of that, it's available on the podcast, and me and Grainne will post it on our respective Facebook pages, the Highland page and Garda Síochána page, a little later on if you want to watch back and get any additional information that you may have missed. The Letterkenny Blues and Roots Festival is upcoming. Mark Black, who's very familiar to listeners, of course, as are both of our guests. Mark, good morning to you. You're festival director.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you keeping?
I'm keeping very well. Thank you very much.
Okay.
And, thanks for having us on.
No, it's brilliant. And we're going to be hearing from Jack McHale of Delta Fuse soon. Good morning to you, Jack.
Morning. Morning.
Thanks very much for joining us. In fact, Jack's going to be performing live. Right, the festival's running from Wednesday to Sunday, July 5th. It's the sixth year. Firstly, 6 years is a lot in this space to be able to keep this going.
Fingers crossed. I think we've done a great job so far.
Keeping it on the road,
Greg. And we started in 2019. A little bit of a hiccup or two through in the COVID years, but we're still going strong. And this is our sixth year, yeah.
Now, there's 70-odd gigs over the course of the festival in all manner of places. Just give us a sense of what people can look forward to. We can't go through the 70, obviously, but it just goes to show the length and breadth of talent.
Absolutely, yeah. So kicking off on the Wednesday, we have our opening tribute night to a former committee member and passed away a few years ago, Dermot Donoghue. And so it's not really a celebration of kind of his old band, the Delta Boys, with friends. And we do that for charity, for the hospice and for motor neuron research. That's kind of kicking it off on the Wednesday. But throughout the weekend, Greg, there's music in about 15 venues throughout the town. Most of the pubs have music on. We've got some street entertainment going on Saturday. There's a few gigs happening out around the main street on Saturday afternoon, bringing a kind of a festival flavour to the place. And carrying on into Sunday, there's just a stack of gigs from, normally they kick around our lunchtime in the daytime. We have a few out at the Kinnegar Brewery, just slightly outside of town as well, which is a really unique space for a gig as well. And the likes of Ingrained Theatres hosting a lunchtime show on Saturday also.
Yeah, it's fantastic for people living in and around the area and for those that have travelled knowing it's on. But there's going to be people landing and didn't know it was on, and they're in for some treat, aren't they? because there's something on all the time, everywhere around the town, and a wee bit outside it too.
There is. Well, that's what festivals are all about. It's not about going out in the evening time and finding music. It's about going out and checking out if there's any atmosphere happening from around midday or even 2 or 3 in the afternoon. You might wander into a venue and find some nice bit of music going on happening at 4 in the afternoon or 3 in the afternoon. And you know, that's what festivals are all about. It's about discovering new music and kind of bringing that atmosphere to Letterkenny also.
So Letterkenny Blues and Roots, that's a broad genre.
It is, yeah. We've got blues, we've got jazz, we've got a bit of reggae and ska. We've got nice folk music, you know. There's a bit of rock. There's a little bit for, hopefully a little bit for everybody in there, you know. Some venues are traditionally known for particularly hosting particular types of music, and you know, we often let the venues decide themselves what they want to do in terms of what their own demographic is for their own audience also.
So there's gigs in Mount Errigal Hotel, Sister Sarah's, the Orchard Bar on Green, on the Warehouse, Central Bar, Blake's Bar, Cottage Bar, Dylan's Hotel, Brewery Bar, McGinley's Bar, Sonny McSwine's, the Townhouse, the Radisson Hotel, and is that place that you mentioned the on the list outside of town a wee bit?
Oh, the Kinniger Brewery.
The Kinniger Brewery there as well. Yeah. Great buy-in from venues.
Absolutely. Everybody has always been on board from the beginning, right from 2019, since we set up the festival, Greg. And it's and you know, now we're attracting bands that are coming from the UK, from Norway, from France. We had last year bands over from Canada, and now the US always features. And, you know, plenty of course, of our own homegrown Irish talent, like, you know, Delta Fuse, like Jack here, and also great local bands, great regional bands from Northern Ireland also as well.
I'd say there's some very interesting late night jam sessions that one around the place.
There's a few.
I would say, Jack, it must be great as a musician as well to be part of something like this. Hopefully you're around to be able to, I know you're performing, but around to be able to take some of the sights and sounds in from the festival.
Oh, 100%, yeah. Well, Mark always gives me a good bit of heads up anyway when the festival's going to be and about the gigs, and then we tend to book that time off, play the gigs, and then see a whole pile of other bands, and Mark's doing a great job. I mean, there's just, as you said, there's people from all over come to it, and then, like, there was a band over from Canada last year, as he was saying, and then we went over to Canada to play with them as well.
Wow, so brilliant.
You know, you're getting so much out of the festival as well if you're coming here playing music, because you're meeting so many people, and I think Letterkenny's kind of built for it as well, with just the main street. You can access everything up and down. So it's a fantastic festival, like, you know, and it'll only get better and better. Like.
And the Whiskey Flowers from the UK are coming over. Jack Austin, Despy, Lot 49, Duke Street, Kings, and then, of course, our amazing local Irish acts. Do you just go and sample, like, almost a buffet of talent, Jack, or are there particular gigs that you're saying, right, I have to get along to that one?
I think it's the sample part. You kind of go in and out to a good few of them, especially when you're staying down. You'll just try and stay out and see as much as you can. You never know what you're going to walk into. As Mark says, there could be ska, soul, funk, blues. It's brilliant, like, you know.
And I think the thing is, you know, don't be too prescriptive. Allow yourself to be surprised by different genres and stuff, because you never know.
Yeah.
And people's interpretations and take on stuff. So it's over there 1st, 2nd, 3rd, 4th and 5th. There's so much going on. There are going to be people, Mark, and how exciting for them that you plan what you're going to do when and where, because there's a great list of venues and gigs and what have you, and you can go from one place to the other, a musical pub crawl.
That's right. You'll certainly enjoy yourself around Letterkenny doing that with that approach. There's the gig guides up online. It's on our socials, on our Facebook, on our Instagram, and you'll find the whole list of activities from Wednesday through to the Sunday evening. And follow the time slots and don't stick to one place. Move around and check out as much music as you can, would be my advice. You know,
yeah,
you never know
so.
What new little sound bites you're going to find, or what bands you're going to find from wherever. So,
well, it's the type of thing and the type of act that you could find yourself stumbling across the best band you've ever heard. You know, that experience where you walk in and it's like, you know, you've half a few drinks, the next thing you think they could play at my wedding.
Yeah.
Grania Duffy, Mr. Castle Band, Lee Headley Band, Stone Cold Hobos, Evergreen Brothers, Irish acts that are performing, and so many more as well. Where are your gigs, Jack? I love to put musicians on the spot early on in the morning. It's not the weekend, it's a weekday, so I'm sure you'd be grand, but I'm sure you can list off what you're doing.
I'll be about in Sister Sarah's in the townhouse, so you'll catch my gigs in there on the Friday and the Saturday night.
Okay, good
stuff. There'll be plenty of kind of blues and soul I'll be doing with John Layton and Mark O'Doherty, two dairy heads on the organ and drums, and it'll be a great crack, guy. Listen, good rocking.
A passive audience is fantastic, right? But is it a different vibe or a different buzz when, you know, you've people seeking out the music that you're performing, if that makes sense, right? So sometimes you can play and some people are there for the music, some people are just chatting. Do you get more focus from an audience, and is it more enjoyable as a performer?
You definitely do, yeah. Like, I mean, I've been playing the town for years, since I was no age, and it's always been great, but when the festival comes up, you get so many people from all around. Like, you know, there'll be ones coming over from Europe and all different stuff in the UK, and then they're there to see the music, or they've come because they've heard you through streaming platforms or anything like that, you know. So, yeah, I think there's a lot more focus that goes on, and then the promotion that Mark does is brilliant. You know, they're constantly posting about it, so there's definitely more of a focus and more of a love for the music. And it's not just maybe a rake of stag parties, you know.
Pay the wages.
But then there is some stag parties that come on. They're like, brilliant, maybe they'll play the wedding or whatever.
How many times can you sing the Kings of Leon or Dominimus? Right, so you're going to sing Leave Home in the Night. What's this track?
This is one of our own. This is one of Delta Fuse's songs, one that I wrote for the last album. A blues song. It's kind of based on the country hill blues in America. So we did this, recorded up in Donegal, in Burt. So it was the hills of Donegal meets country blues. So
sounds like a match made in heaven. Go ahead.
Grand. Deep and wide, set out searching on a 4-day ride. Blood red sunset sinks in your back, snorting whispers through the wind in your hat. Well, you can leave home in the night, child, while its nails scratch at you. Burn your down while the prairie's dark and blue. Well, shine your shoes and straighten your coat. Flowers die in a vase made of gold. Paved in riches, life's tax free. Money won't cover a dead man's feet. Well, you can leave home in the night, child, while its nails scratch at you. You can burn your lamps all down while the prairie's dark and blue. Where I fall in plenty, feet they hurt, ripped and torn from the grass and dirt. For miles in 40 degrees, burns like hell in my heart and in my knees. Well, you can leave home in the night, child. Its nails scratch at you. Burn your lamps all down. Nothing you won't do.
Wow, Fantastic stuff. Not good enough to get a clap out of Mark, but
I've been trying to give us a festival.
He can't clap you in case of family medicine. So we have brilliant stuff. How do you get that much noise out of that guitar? What's different about that? Is it how you're playing it? You know, is it, are the strings looser, or how are you getting that much noise out of that guitar?
I think I just beat the hell out of it.
Is it? Because I'm not a massive fan of strumming, even though I can't play. You know, it can be a bit, but that's so much in that. That sounds fantastic.
Well, thanks very much.
As you can tell, I know nothing about music. But, you know.
It's funny, Greg, you know, you said as testament that Jackie's come up a long way since we first discovered him on the streets of the Letterkenny Buskin Festival years and years ago.
That's right.
As a young man. And
has he kept his head, though, Mark?
He's kept his head. He always keeps his heart close to home still.
Well, listen, that is just a sample of what you can look forward to. That's one man and a guitar making a lot of fantastic sound there. He'll be performing with Delta Fuse, of course, at the weekend. And there are gigs everywhere you look and on the street in Letterkenny. It is the Letterkenny Blues and Roots Festival. Well done, Mark, to you and those behind it, actually. You know, because the point I was trying to make, and I probably didn't make it clumsily, it's great to have an idea, and it's great to have the first year. But to be able to come back and to increase in size and, you know, have people return year after year from all over the place, that is a true achievement of doing something that's a success. And it's a new thing for Letterkenny, and God knows how much it's worth to the local economy. So it's good for musicians, good for the town, good for the surrounding areas. So fair play, Mark.
Thank you. And a big shout out to all the help from all the committee and volunteers that do help us, and the sponsors, of course, that help us get this thing on the road.
Yeah, for sure. Well done. And the poster's great too. All right, lads. Thanks very much indeed. Mark Black, Festival Director for Letterkenny Blues and Roots Festival. The website, just in case people want to plan what they're going to see throughout the course of the next few days.
Visit on our socials on Facebook, Letterkenny Blues and Roots Festival, or same on Instagram also.
And if people want to hear more from you, Jack, is it under the Delta Fuse banner? You know, you talked about being on the socials and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you'll find all the stuff, all our originals and stuff.
You haven't retired yet off the Spotify streams, no?
No, there's plenty of stuff going around, and all the controversy and stuff like that.
But you know what? It's about getting the music out to an audience. I mean, you could literally have someone that could come up to you from Germany and say, you know, I listen to you all the time. You know, and that's the value to you.
Well, that's the thing. I wish it wasn't that way, but sometimes you have to. But there's still plenty of CD sales going, so that's good.
Oh, well, that's it too, yeah. And vinyl, get in on that too.
100%, yeah.
Brilliant stuff, lads. Thanks very much indeed. Right, we get to finish off with a few comments here. Apparently, there's a bad oil spill from around Optium Roundabout, right up to the mountain top and onto the Calhame Road. So whatever happens there, someone's overfilled the tank or something, perhaps. Be careful. On housing, does this new law mean the council will build SI houses that are council houses in rural areas? The truth is we don't know yet exactly what the situation is. So what we're going to do is wait to digest that, and we'll bring you concrete details when we get them. Hi, Greg. You were talking about pregnancies, etc. this morning on your show. Well, years ago, there was no fancy machines. I went for an appointment and I was told I was having twins by feeling my tummy. That was the way it was then. After many weeks, it was discovered. It was one big baby, over £10 in weight, Greg. That was in the 70s. Thankfully, things have gotten better now, indeed, in terms of baby survivals and stuff. It's an interesting situation. I wonder how it felt to be told that, rather than prepping for twins, you were having one bigger baby. And lastly, just before we go, 34 years last week, I had my first baby in Letterkenny under a gynaecologist by the name of Mr. McCauley. I think he may no longer be with us. He was such a great gynaecologist, but there is always a but. I near lost my baby, a big shock of trauma with an emergency section. Thankfully, a big, strong baby now, but spent a lot of his time in hospital because of the trauma he had, a swallowing meconium. I think that might be. All right, listen, I'm glad to hear things are going well now. Okay, that's where we leave it on the show for today. We'll be back with you tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock.